Hello and welcome to the live webinar, Mapping Your Marketplace Moves, sponsored by Channel Advisor and powered by the Target Marketing Group. I'm Drew James, Publisher and Brand Director for Target Marketing, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. Here today to discuss mapping your marketplace moves are Mackenzie Laney, Marketplaces Manager at Build.com, and Luke Evans, Manager Marketplaces Services at Channel Advisor. Here's a little background on our presenters. Mackenzie oversees much of the marketplaces channel for lead home improvement e-tailer Build.com. She has led the charge from launch, execution, and optimization on powerhouse platforms such as Amazon and eBay through proven tactics in an always-changing third-party retailer landscape. She has also been involved in successful launch and execution of Build.com products on Walmart, Rakuten, Newegg, and most recently, Jet.com. As Manager Marketplaces Services, Luke manages a team that is responsible for all of Channel Advisor's full-service marketplace customers. Luke uses his 8 years of e-commerce experience across various roles at Channel Advisor to help Channel Advisor customers succeed in their various marketplace initiatives. And so, without further ado, I'd like to turn things over to Mackenzie and Luke.
Thanks, Drew, and thank you to everyone on the line joining us today. Appreciate the kind words and introduction. Let's go ahead and get started and talk about mapping your marketplace's moves. Today, we're going to cover four key areas during this presentation. First, we'll briefly examine the marketplace landscape. Second, we'll explore some long-term strategies that will help you contemplate and map where to go to next. Third, we'll understand the keys to short-term successes. Once you are on a marketplace, what should you do and how do you maximize your potential there? Finally, you'll learn from Build.com's experience as Mackenzie Laney walks through their successes and challenges in expanding their marketplace program. Marketplaces has come a long way and really evolved over the past 20-plus years, but it all started with Amazon and eBay. I like to group these into four different periods, starting with the early period. With the idea of marketplaces being new and cutting edge, there was less competition at this time. There were fewer sellers with smaller amounts of listings, which allowed for early adopters to capitalize on the early success. Not only was there less competition, but also fewer options. As a seller, you didn't have to think about what's the next marketplace I need to list on. And there was a smaller buyer base, which meant that the opportunity for growing sales was a bit limited by the number of active users. But at the end of this early period, Amazon opened up their site to third-party sellers, and that really ushered in the second period, the innovative period. This is the time frame where these marketplace behemoths started really advancing and expanding and improving the marketplace buying experience. Buyer awareness increased, and sellers also saw the opportunity to get in front of more people and generate more sales, leading to a growing competition. Fortunately, as the awareness grew, the buyer base was increasing. Consumers were getting more comfortable with the buying experience and the trust of purchasing online and from a marketplace. So Amazon and eBay and Buy took note of this and started building on these successes as they implemented new ideas to the mix like Buy It Now and Amazon Prime. These are just a couple of the ways that marketplaces were delivering new opportunities to add value to both sellers and buyers alike. Amazon specifically saw a lot of success in building a marketplace, and other marketplaces followed suit and began to make their mark. We saw the emergence of Sears and Newegg as marketplaces, and Buy.com was rebranded as Rakuten. This all fell within the growth period. Amazon's success created this wave of more websites, building marketplaces, and created more complexity. As new marketplaces launched, the existing ones rolled out new features to evaluate and test. So eBay launched their global shipping program, and Amazon rolled out their sponsored product program. Because many of these marketplaces were already established websites, it helped fuel the rapid growth of buyers. And competition for sellers continued to grow. According to Amazon, there are over 2 million sellers worldwide, so a lot of competition among sellers in a crowded marketplace. As we look to the future, we find ourselves at the edge of the last of the four periods. Our CEO, Scott Wingo, began using a phrase that I'm also borrowing to describe this period. Marketplaces are eating the e-commerce world. Even more new marketplaces are on the horizon as everyone looks to compete with Amazon and eBay here in the U.S. and Alibaba's Taobao and Tmall in China, as well as others around the globe. One of the new domestic marketplaces is Jet.com. We'll talk about Jet a little bit more later on in this presentation. Some sellers are also starting to look at international expansion options, whether it's Amazon or eBay in another country, or perhaps Mercado Libre in Latin America, or Tmall in China. All of these are contributing to the increased and fragmented number of new marketplaces. Even here in the U.S., we've seen new sites like 11Main, House, Best Buy, Etsy, and more popping up offering a different take on marketplaces. Which really leaves us with just one burning question. Who's next? If you are like me and believe marketplaces are eating the e-commerce world, any one of these could be the next big opportunity in the marketplace channel. Both Twitter and Facebook have been in the news for testing a buy button, and a recent Wall Street Journal article mentioned Google building a marketplace. In laying the foundation, you can probably see why marketplaces are important. They have a large, loyal buyer base that you can tap into and offer you instant credibility with those buyers. They present opportunities to expand your reach globally by allowing access to an established infrastructure, and they offer additional fulfillment options so that you can also outsource your warehousing needs if necessary. Building on that foundation, let's talk about a map for expanding. I'll start with tips for expanding domestically and then move to international. First, if you are only listing on one marketplace today, you may be putting your business at risk. We talk a lot about diversification at Channel Advisor, and it's no different in the marketplaces channel. Just last year, one of our sellers was listing on Amazon only and doing really well. Unfortunately, they violated some Amazon policies, which led to their account being suspended. So they were left scrambling to figure out how to replace that lost revenue. It was an important reminder that we all need to spread out our portfolio and list on at least two or three different marketplaces so that you're not entirely dependent on just one, whether it's something you as a seller did or even if a particular marketplace is not performing well. Second, target the marketplace based on your category. Though results will vary by seller, Sears has done well for sellers in apparel, tools, or sporting goods. Those selling in home or health and beauty categories have seen positive results on Rakuten. And if you sell office supplies or electronics, Newegg is the next best marketplace to pursue. Jet.com is the newest marketplace to arrive with a lot of excitement and anticipation. They will take the commission from sellers and pass that on as savings to buyers, allowing them to offer some of the best pricing across the internet. Jet is also believed to be working on a rules engine that sellers can use to offer other buying discounts. An example of this might be offering a discount to buyers who choose to forego the option of returns. Sellers who integrate early earn favorability in Jet's ranking algorithm when all other factors are equal. So there is added incentive to work on setup and integration with them now. If you are wondering about domestic marketplace expansion, here are five questions to ask yourself. Number one, is my category available or open? It's important to note that not all marketplaces are open to all categories. Number two, Do I meet the data requirements? You want to make sure you can list all of your products by ensuring you have quality data to provide. Number three, are my competitors there? In many cases, it might be yes, and sometimes no. If it's yes, then it's absolutely a place you want to be. If no, it's an even better opportunity for you to take advantage of a market where none of your competitors are. Number four, is my customer service ready? There will almost certainly be a similar but slightly varied process to understand and follow with each new marketplace. So make sure your customer service is ready for those. And number five, is my integration process quick and seamless? Whether this is through Channel Advisor or on your own, make sure you have a good understanding of what's needed to support launching a new marketplace for both listings and orders. When evaluating international expansion, targeting English-speaking countries like UK, Australia, and Canada is always a good idea. But for those non-English-speaking countries, you need to have your product data translated into the local language. You'll also need to convert your prices into the local currency, too. You can see that this slide breaks down that complexity and opportunity, and the complexity is really driven by the translation needs and tax and duties laws, which we will discuss in a minute. Cross-border shopping is growing, and you can see that the U.S. and U.K. are the most popular overseas destinations, with China and Hong Kong right behind them, which leads us into a discussion on agile cross-border trade. Marketplaces alleviate a lot of the heavy investment needed with a more traditional CBT approach of building a transactional website. This way, you can solve minimum challenges and connect to existing demand. By starting small and testing, you'll fail fast, but you'll also fail small, and the result will be that you'll learn quickly. So as you begin to better understand the consumer behavior and the competition in a new locale, you can fix what's broken and capitalize on the new marketplace you're listing in. From there, you'll want to iterate on those changes by testing new things, possibly failing again, and then repeating the process. But at the core of this process, you have to remember, it allows you as a seller to have a smaller investment to get to that first sale. And once you push revenue higher than expenses, you can then invest that in another locale or even another marketplace within your existing locales. As I mentioned on a previous slide, if you're just starting out, starting with an English-speaking country would definitely be the easiest. Right next door to us, you can start with Canada, where they have marketplaces you're already familiar with, like Amazon, eBay, and Newegg. And Canada is a great place for B2B sellers. You can also consider Europe, which, as you saw, has a strong e-commerce market. You can start in the UK first with something like Amazon or Tesco, and then branch out to other countries like France with La Redoux and Germany with Zalando and Mein Paket. Both La Redoux and Zalando are strictly for fashion, shoes, and accessories, so it's something to consider if that's what you sell. If you do branch out to these other countries, though, you'll definitely need translations. Another place that isn't always top of mind, but should be, is New Zealand. An English-speaking country, and residents are used to shopping online and paying higher prices since they are off on their own. This is a place to consider selling any seasonal products. When it's winter here in the U.S., you can be selling summer products there. Another hot market to consider is Latin America, and Mercado Libre offers a great CBT option for U.S. sellers to sell into Brazil. You don't need a new business entity, and there are freight forwarding options available. but keep in mind that translations will be needed to sell there. So if you're considering international expansion, you should ask yourself these seven questions. Number one, have I spoken with a tax professional about international selling? Tax laws will vary depending on the country you are targeting, but you need to be aware of them and how it will affect your business. Number two, how will I translate product data? I recommend outsourcing translations to an expert for the best results. Number three, will I fulfill using Fulfillment by Amazon or Fulfillment by Merchant? Fulfillment by Amazon might offer you a better deal, faster shipping, and you don't have to worry about having a warehouse overseas to compete with the local sellers. Number four, what are the dimensions of my shipment? Keeping package dimension to a minimum will allow you to provide an inexpensive shipping option to compete with those sellers that do have local shipping capabilities. Number five, am I equipped to respond quickly to customer inquiries? You'll want to respond as quickly as possible to gain trust, and keep in mind that foreign language customers prefer email and or live chat. Number six, how will I handle returns? Some countries require a local address for returns. So maybe you want to possibly consider refunding the order, as it may be less costly than a return. And lastly, we mentioned this already, but is my product seasonal? So is there an opportunity to sell my products when the seasons are changing here in the U.S.? If you are already on one or more of these marketplaces, I want to leave you with a few ways to act on the now. First, I highly recommend following the rules. If you are violating a marketplace policy today, you are really putting your account at risk to be suspended. It's honestly not worth it, in my opinion. Second, you must offer superb customer service. According to an Oracle customer experience study, 89% of customers say they have switched buying behavior because of a poor customer experience. In that same study, 86% of customers said they were willing to pay more for a great customer experience. So your success on marketplaces is critically dependent on providing a great experience for your customers. Third, when applicable, you should implement promotions. It's no surprise that buyers love to get a deal. While you don't need to offer discounts all the time or on every product, implementing promotions is a great way to stand out from your competition. Fourth, you want to be sure to meet all of the product listing requirements. Good product data allows you to meet those requirements so that you don't have listing errors. And don't stop at the required attributes. Try to provide the recommended ones too. And finally, you have to stay engaged with the marketplaces. Keep up with the changes and new features and resolve listing errors when they arise. Build relationships with the account reps and maintain those interactions so that you are in front of any new opportunities that come up. Hopefully, you now feel more equipped with a plan to expand your marketplace's presence either domestically or internationally. Now I'd like to hand it over to Mackenzie Laney from Build.com to talk more about her challenges and successes in building their marketplaces campaign.
Thank you, Luke. My name is Mackenzie Laney, and I am the marketplace manager for the home improvement retailer Build.com. Some of our direct competitors are the likes of Home Depot and Lowe's, et cetera. We launched our marketplaces about 3 years ago. We have our own website. We actually have a niche of websites. We actually have nine in total. And this was an initiative that we decided to move forward with, and it has absolutely been a journey. So I'm here today to actually mirror a lot of the things that Luke talked about in his part of the presentation in terms of what has worked well for us and what have been challenges as well. So first question first that we asked ourselves, we have our own website, we already have a foundation, we have a brand, why would we sell on marketplaces? And, you know, it really does actually lend itself to an audience and a demographic that is outside of traditional e-commerce marketing efforts. So as a company, we spend a lot of time and resources devoted to, you know, paid search structures, cost per click structures in order to get our products and our name out with the likes of Google and MSN and Yahoo and whatnot. But we realize that marketplaces are actually starting to become a search engine in and themselves, especially a transactional, and specifically Amazon. So we saw an opportunity there to introduce our product mix and really launch on a new platform, new from what we were used to and new from, again, our traditional paid search efforts. We believe that it would create incremental revenue to our business. So like I said, we already have our own website. We have our niche website. And this was just going to be one more, you know, way to put our products and our brand out there. It supplemented our business model. It may not be right for every company's business model, but it's little overhead. The fees are nominal compared to what we do pay for paid search, and you know, we really did consider it an incremental move. It also, again, lending to the brand building and you know, getting your product mix out there, it really does lend itself to acquisition and retention for customers. So they see your brand, they have a good experience with you, and you hope that they come back. And lastly, we have used this as a platform to test new categories and new products. It's a way for us to test with vendors to make sure that they are going to deliver on their promises and to just expand and see what the market looks like and what customers are looking for. So a little bit about our journey and our launch. We launched on eBay March 2012. Our initial launch was a direct integration with eBay from our database to eBay. And we launched with our plumbing category because we actually could guarantee the drop shipment portion of the customer experience would be good because we actually control those warehouses. The initial integration was decent, but we did have some issues with the direct integration. We kind of pushed through that and just kind of dealt with whatever issues came up internally. But we saw over time that our sales were increasing. We saw consistency in our order fulfillment, in our search results, and everything seemed to be running fairly smoothly. And we really could guarantee that we were going to provide the best customer experience to the customer, of course. And that's what all of these marketplaces have in common is they want to make sure if you're selling on their platform that you are delivering on any and all promises that you make. So with that consistency and with a good track record on eBay, we decided to launch on Amazon, of course. The fees were a little bit larger on Amazon, so we decided to launch with a different category that worked better into our margin, which was lighting. And that launch was also a direct integration. And within about a month and a half, we found ourselves having some serious issues with ASIN mapping. And for those of you that are not, familiar, ASIN is Amazon standard identification number. And so hopefully all of you have probably shopped on Amazon at some point and you see that multiple sellers will be listed on one listing, and that listing has an identification number that goes with it. Well, Amazon has some magical algorithm that will match you to whatever they think the listing is best based off of your product data. We've found that title and UPC are typically the biggest parts of that. That being said, we allowed Amazon to do the matching for us. And fairly quickly, we ran into some issues. We actually ended up mapping to a ceiling fan part where we were actually really selling the ceiling fan in and itself. And so essentially, we were selling a ceiling fan for about $25, and this happened over a weekend period. And we came in Monday, and we had been basically gone on this, all the different deal websites, hey, get this great fan. We had hundreds of orders from it, and it actually almost suspended our Amazon account. We were able to work through. We kind of call it the lighting debacle of November 2012. But what it did is it really showed us that we really needed to trust the experts on these platforms. And we had already utilized Channel Advisor in our CSE marketing, so comparison shopping engine, so the likes of ShopZilla, Price Grabber, whatnot. And they had this marketplace component. And one of the biggest things that sold us on it was that they do have an ASIN matching program mm-hmm. in place internally that before you even send your product to Amazon gives you the opportunity to confirm or deny what they think is the best match for you. And based off of the experience that we had had, we knew that this would help us get lots more products onto the platform. And so from that, once we utilized the Channel Advisor Marketplace platform, we were able to launch fairly quickly on other subsequent marketplaces. As you can see, we went quickly into Walmart, into Newegg, into Rakuten, and then into House, and we will be actually launching on Jet.com as well. It helped us to syndicate quickly, and really just we were able to trust the experts. As we got bigger, though, we realized that there was going to be a need for something that Luke touched on, for a devoted customer service team for all of these marketplaces. As I said before, we have our own website. We have actually 9 smaller websites, and we have a huge call center that fields thousands of calls a day. But this is an experience that's slightly different from the experience that we're used to on our own website. And so we actually created a customer service team of 3 people that were devoted specifically to taking calls for marketplace-related issues and also answering messages. That's proved to be very helpful for us. You know, every marketplace has its own nuance, has its own structure. Amazon specifically requires that you answer messages within 24 hours, regardless of if it's a holiday or whatnot. And with eBay, there are bidding questions and whatnot. And so it's just been really great for us to have people trained and devoted specifically to all of these specific marketplaces. So I'm really going to just focus on 2 of the biggest parts of our business, which is, of course, Amazon and eBay, and just kind of touch on some of the things that we have seen as being successes and challenges. For Amazon specifically, understanding what the buy box is, and that is the coveted position on a listing that is given to a seller for a number of reasons, and that can change frequently. The biggest driver of buy box placement is your price. Again, with Amazon, they want to give the customer the best experience, you know, provide the cheapest product, the quickest way they can, so on and so forth. So if you can kind of fit into those aspects of the listing, then you will hopefully get that placement. So really the 3 biggest pieces of the buy box and buy box placement, like I said, price is first. ship time and speed. So if you can get it quickest out of all of the sellers to the customer, that will also bump you in terms of listing placement. And then your rating as well. If you can prove that you have had positive feedback, that you can fulfill orders, that you're not canceling orders, all those kinds of aspects of the customer service side, they'll also reward you in placement. As I mentioned before, there are ACE and matching issues. I think all sellers, if you do currently sell on Amazon, have dealt with this in some regard. ChannelAdvisor has that program in place. It's been really helpful, but, you know, things do slip through the cracks, and we have found that it's really important to constantly audit your ACE and matches. For us, we have over 200,000 products live on Amazon at any given time, so it can be difficult to stay on top of that, but just auditing and making sure that you are on, sometimes there's multiple ASINs for a product. So you want to be on the best ASIN, the most robust, all those kinds of things. So just staying on top of that has really helped us to make sure that we are staying proactive in that ASIN matching atmosphere. Also, being considered featured merchant will actually allow you buy box eligibility. Being featured merchant typically can take about 30 to 90 days if you're a new seller. And what it does is it's basically Amazon is going to give you almost like a probationary period if you're new to the platform, and make sure that you are delivering on your promises, that your ship times are being met, your orders are being fulfilled, all of those, you know, main pieces of the customer experience are within, you know, a certain level of good facing customer service. So once they determine that, you know, you're okay, you've got some feedback, all that kind of stuff, then you are then able to be featured merchant, and that does give you buy box eligibility. For those of you that have the resources and the bandwidth, sponsored ads program that Amazon offers for marketplace-specific sellers can be really helpful. It's a cost-per-click type structure. Basically, you're paying when customers are putting in keywords that you have targeted. The one caveat to that is that you have to actually have the buy box in order to show up. So that is one thing, again, that goes back to having the buy box is going to be one of the biggest ones that you can have. ChannelAdvisor offers repricer tools. There's many of repricing tools available in the market, but what it does is it kind of automates and makes sure that you are, you know, you set a floor price, so you don't want to go below a certain amount or a certain price, but you can, if somebody else is competing with you on price, you can actually automate some of those based off of pricing rules. And then lastly, trying to maintain or even trying to figure out a way to have a relationship with Amazon account reps. I know there's varying levels of sellers, and so I'm not 100% sure, you know, where that fits in, but I know from when we had the lighting ASIN issue after our initial launch, it was key for us to have somebody at Amazon that we could call and help work through some of it. Again, with so many things automated and, you know, so many feeds going back and forth, it's always helpful to make sure that there's a human element there if something, you know, comes up. On the eBay side, it's fairly similar to Amazon in that you are rewarded by providing the best customer experience. And the way they reward you for that is giving you a top-rated seller. So, again, it's on a 90-day window. If you are within a certain percentage of your orders are low on certain things like pre-fulfillment cancellation, hitting your ship time, answering questions for customers, you know, all those different aspects, if you are within all of those pieces, then they'll award you a top-rated seller. It gives you kind of a badge of honor on all of your listings. It's basically saying, hey, you know, we trust the seller that they are good in our eyes. It helps with search rankings, and it also does give you breaks on seller fees as well. Channel Advisor is really great in that they offer a lot of reporting for the eBay platform. So like inventory velocity. So you can help to make sure by utilizing those types of reports. Inventory velocity is the one that we use the most to make sure that we're being proactive on some of our top SKUs in making sure that those are available for customers. Something that's unique to eBay from the rest of the marketplaces is that you are actually able to have a storefront. You can create your own page, and you can create the content and the experience for the customer. We're lucky that we actually have our own website, and so this is kind of goes hand in hand. We have a whole team devoted to a customer experience on build.com itself, and so we just kind of basically recreated that experience on eBay. But what it does is it helps to brand you, and it helps to keep customers in your store. So having that opportunity and utilizing it would definitely be beneficial. They also do have a lightning deal. They call it daily deals program, where it could be a fast win if you have liquidations or have a really great price break on something to enlist in that to just, you know, offload some inventory. And then lastly, they do have the global shipping program that's unique to them as well. They take the overhead of shipping internationally. They have a cross dock in Kentucky, and they really do take most of the responsibility and ownership of that process, which for us, we don't really have the bandwidth to do that logistically. So it makes sense for us to participate through that program and let them take kind of the overhead for that. So I touched on some of the keys for success on Amazon and eBay, but they are never without challenges. And I just want to touch on some of the issues that we do face currently and have faced in the past. On Amazon, one of the biggest pieces is that we're not actually able to sell on Amazon FBA, which is fulfilled by Amazon. And we have tax nexus issues because we work with warehouses across the United States. So this is a huge opportunity for most sellers. So you actually give Amazon your inventory and they fulfill it for you. So you're eligible for Prime and you're eligible for two-day shipping. And those are two pieces that in winning the buy box are going to win every time. So currently we can't sell via FBA. As I mentioned before, just maintaining the buy box is always a challenge. It's so volatile. There's so many people coming in and out of the listing, and it can change very quickly depending on who's got inventory and who's changing pricing. And so maintaining it is definitely a challenge, but a great win at the same time. For our business particularly, we do have MAP policies in place, which is manufactured advertised price. So we actually can't do much with our pricing. We have to maintain price parity to our own website, and we have, you know, relationships with key brands and manufacturers where we want to maintain the integrity of our name at build.com, and we will not violate any of those agreements. So for us, one of the biggest pieces that we can win on is customer service, and that's what we pride ourselves on. And you can see down below these, this is a snapshot of our current Amazon status, and we're all in the green currently, but that does change. Fourth point down, maintaining optimal account performance, making sure that you're always in green because you never know where you're going to be fitting into place in those listings. And then in terms of fees, we're in the home improvement category. We are a big player on that platform, but we pay just the same as everybody else. There have been no grace is given to us. And so because of that, there are just certain items that we cannot sell. We have such a diverse product mix and so many different margins across that, that it just doesn't make sense for us. Again, one of our biggest pieces was we want to build incremental revenue to our business. And selling something as a loss leader on these platforms does not make sense for our business model. So there just are things that we cannot sell. On the eBay side, it's kind of along the same lines of Amazon, maintaining top-rated seller. So that's something that we have actually, we've actually lost it twice for many different reasons. We're on our way back to getting it this month, but it's, you know, they're very tight with their metrics, and if you're not providing the best experience for external reasons or whatever the case is, then, you know, you won't have that badge within that 90 roll, that rolling 90 days. Also, as a business, like I said, we have so many brands and so many product mix that there are just some brands and some vendors that have not really subscribed to this new side of doing business on e-commerce. And so, again, to maintain the integrity and the relationships that we have, we don't sell on certain marketplaces at the request of these brands and vendors. And just to touch very lightly, because I'll go down a rabbit hole if we get too deep into this, but eBay did suffer some major hits as a company last year, and I think we could all agree that it affected everybody, and there's always going to be a recovery period from that, which we saw last year. There was a security breach, and then there was also a Google penalty that both hit in 2014. Moving to others, some of our smaller marketplaces, more or less have all of those same challenges, but there sometimes are marketplace-specific challenges. So specifically, like with Newegg, we have to deliver products within a five-day period to a customer, and that's part of the agreement. Well, there are certain things we just can't get to them in 5 days, like a tub or whatever it may be that we know for a fact is going to go on a big, huge lift gate and take 7 to 10 days to get to the customer. So if we can't make that promise to them, then we can't sell it. And then just on the integration side, Amazon and eBay, of course, are the most robust, but smaller marketplaces and newer marketplaces, the platforms aren't always built out the way that we're used to. And so we just always, you know, in testing and launching, there's just always issues that come up, and that's just going to be the case regardless. But it's something to keep in mind that could, you know, put some kind of some hitches in the mix. So just to sum up a little bit of what I've talked about and what Luke talked about, again, this is going to mirror a lot of what he has already touched on. Overall tips and tactics for success. Some of the biggest pieces that I would say is, again, going through and auditing your listing, making sure that you're ranked the best, that you're on the best listing, that you have the best price, and you're doing whatever you can to pull whatever levers you can within the limitations that you have on those specific marketplaces. So just being on top of your data, making sure, you know, it's as robust as possible, that your listings are mapped correctly, all of those kinds of things are going to help you put you ahead of the curve. Utilizing reporting tools, be a channel advisor. They're there for a reason. I think any channel advisor users know that they have releases every few months. That's always based off of customer feedback, and it's really there to help you be successful. As I touched on pretty much all the marketplaces, seller performance is key. You're selling on their platform. They want to make sure that you are being the best seller that you can be, and you will be rewarded for that or the opposite, depending on the kind of experience that you're giving to the customer. Knowing your vertical and other third-party sellers, so just knowing your competition, as Luke had mentioned, if you want to be in that competitive environment, making sure you're there. If you're in an environment that's non-competitive, making sure that you have a presence. Those are all key factors in determining how you're going to be successful on those marketplaces. And lastly, I think you can actually use this on anything that you do. What we've seen is quality inputs are always going to equal quality outputs. And that is going to be the case no matter what you do in business. But for us, that has been one of the biggest pieces that we tend to tell our employees and new members of our team is you put the hard work in the beginning, and you'll get the rewards in the end. So I'm actually going to turn this back over to Luke, and I'll let him end the presentation.
Thanks, Mackenzie. Just a quick overview on ChannelAdvisor. We are the leading software as a service platform. We were founded in 2001 and have over 2,800 customers with a focus on marketplaces, digital marketing, and where to buy. We are a trusted partner by thousands of top sellers globally, including Build.com. And our platform is built to connect sellers to sources of demand by taking in a single source of product data from a retailer or manufacturer and pushing that data out to many locations, including Google, Bing, Houzz, eBay, Amazon, Jet, Shopify, BigCommerce, and many others. And now I'd like to hand it back over to Drew for some questions from the audience.
Luke, thanks for handing off, and we're going to dive into some questions right now. The first one from our audience is, what proportion of your business would you expect to be done through marketplace relationships? And is there a typical best practice level to be achieved?
Yeah, I'll start with that, and then maybe Mackenzie can add something. So there's not necessarily a benchmark that, you know, that we have to share around that. But we do know that involvement with an account rep at the marketplace definitely helps you out. They're your advocate. They're going to present you for deal opportunities and new features. So any chance that you can work with an account rep or build a relationship with someone at the marketplace is really valuable from that perspective. So I don't know, Mackenzie, if you had any other additional thoughts to share on that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much what you said, Luke, you know, being at the forefront of what's new and being engaged is only going to help your business. So most definitely.
And we have another one here. It says, for both of you guys, says marketplaces are getting crowded with sellers now. What's the best thing you can do to stand out from the crowd?
Go ahead, Mackenzie.
That's okay. I was just going to say, you know, a lot of what I spoke to was providing the best experience for the customer has proved for us to be one of the biggest wins on that. So go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this, but, you know, making sure that you're following the rules, the customer service piece, when you can, implementing promotions, and staying engaged with the marketplaces, all of those are certainly ways to stand out amongst the crowded marketplace.
And we have one here about something new on the market. Initial thoughts on Who's for Mackenzie.
On How's, yes. We definitely have a presence on there. For us and our product mix, it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of emerging as what we would consider like a Pinterest type or a collection type experience for the customer, which we want to be able to tap into. It's been great for us. We're seeing growth, and I think it's a great platform.
Thank you, Mackenzie. The question for ChannelAdvisor here for you, Luke, does this attendee is asking, how well does ChannelAdvisor do with drop shippers?
Yeah, so our platform works well. I mean, we can bring in the data from each of those drop shippers into one location and manage that for you as you need. Obviously, it's going to vary by seller and the number of drop shippers, but we have a lot of flexibility to accept feed formats in almost any different format. So, I think it'd be a good follow-up conversation between us and the particular retailer.
And guys, we have a question here about duties and taxes. It says, how do you deal with duties, taxes, and currency conversion when selling internationally? Do you build them into your price to cover your bases? And can Channel Advisor help with this?
Yeah, it's another really good question. Sorry, I was going to say, it's another really good question. I think, personally, I think that, yeah, you should consider building those into your price to cover your bases. Channel Advisor has a lot of flexibility around rules to account for this. So assuming that, you know, the retailer can provide us the necessary data points to help them calculate this, we could possibly be able to help them out and handle that within the Channel Advisor system.
And Mackenzie, here's a question for you. It says, Mackenzie, have you found you have to sell your products for a lower, or I'm sorry, I'm reading the question here, at a different or lower price on Amazon versus eBay? So it's really a pricing question regarding the marketplaces.
For us personally, we're not able to change pricing like I touched on before. I think that pricing can be a huge strategy as a seller for Amazon. We cannot really do much on that end, and so it's hard for me to really speak to what the successes would be. But since price is the biggest driver of buy box placement, I think that you could definitely take that as a strategy to Amazon as opposed to eBay.
And Luke, we have a question for you. What location would you recommend starting with when expanding internationally? I think you touched on that a little bit during the presentation.
Yeah, I always recommend pursuing English-speaking countries first because the product translation will be pretty minimal. I mean, you know, UK might have a slightly different spelling than the US. But another good, you know, barometer of where to go next is if you're using eBay's global shipping program, you can see where your shipments are being pushed out to, which countries it's going to. And that's another good way to kind of identify which locales or which countries to test first.
And staying with the international theme, Mackenzie, there's a question for how does Build.com handle its inventory for the international market?
So we actually don't participate on the marketplace side besides the eBay Global Shipping Program. Like I touched on before, logistically, we just don't have the bandwidth to have that as part of our business model currently. But like I said, with eBay, they take much of the overhead in terms of that with the duties and the fees and the cross-dock locations and even the returns. And so it just makes sense for us to at least tap into some type of international audience, you know, provided that eBay is taking that overhead. But currently we don't sell internationally outside of that program.
And Mackenzie, we have another question for you regarding Jet. It says, with Jet being a new marketplace, how did you make your decision to launch with them? And do you have any concerns since it's a new marketplace?
Basically, you know, in growing our marketplace business as a part of, you know, the overall business strategy of Build.com, we want to have a presence anywhere we can. There's been some great PR around Jet in terms of their platform and what they're going to provide to sellers. It's a membership-based program, which is more unique, and it gives rewards to customers. Seems to kind of position itself as a different kind of marketplace. And so, of course, we want to be on there, and we want to have a presence wherever we can in order to grow our part of the business. It really is a no-brainer, I guess, for us to launch on whatever's coming up.
And, Mackenzie, we have one more for you. This is more of a personnel-related question. This attendee says, Build.com is very lucky to have someone like you on board. Where do you suggest we start to find someone with your skill set to join our company? And it says, did you have work with another e-commerce company prior?
Well, yeah, it's a little difficult for me to answer that because I just know based off of my experience, I was involved in the initial launch of eBay and the initial launch of this program within Bill.com. And it was very new 3 years ago, and it's still new. And I have gotten to the point I have gotten to because I have been involved in every aspect for 3 years. And I've been involved in all parts of this business. So I've seen lots and lots of trial and error. And man, if I'm not an expert 3 years later, then I'm going to be doing something wrong. I think it's been a process, and it really has been a journey, like Luke had said, where, you know, in launching and in growing and in going on new marketplaces, and just trying to be successful, learning as you go, really. I think that it is becoming a much more recognized e-commerce platform. As you can see, more businesses, you know, starting to do what we have done. And so hopefully there'll be more experts in the field soon.
Definitely a learning by doing kind of experience there, no doubt. Yes. I think we have time maybe for one more question. And there's been a lot of questions about international. We've touched on a little bit, and you guys certainly touched on a lot in the presentation. This is really more of a general one. So it's how do I know if I'm ready to expand internationally?
Yeah, I can take that one. So, you know, again, I think you want to consider the seven questions we discussed and make sure you've researched the policies or changes you might need to make for expansion. I also recommend ensuring that you've tapped all the key marketplaces domestically that we discussed. So, you know, in many cases, that expanding domestically is going to be easier and possibly a greater revenue opportunity for you. So once you feel like you've kind of hit all of those marketplaces here, then it's a good sign. You know, if you feel like you're kind of maxing out here in the U.S., then it's definitely a good sign to start thinking about where do I go internationally to continue expanding and taking more market share.
So that's about all the time we have right now for questions. I do want our attendees to know that if we didn't get a chance to get to your question, our panelists do have a chance to review any questions we didn't get to on the live event, and hopefully can have a chance to get back to you guys. On behalf of Channel Advisor and Retail Online Integration, I'd like to thank you for attending today's webinar. Please be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And please also just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We would be very grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. So I certainly hope to see you all at the next Retail Online Integration webinar.